Okay. It certainly, thank you, by the way, Jeff, and thank you for that very nice introduction. I couldn't read it, so I'm hoping that you couldn't read it too. But you did, I'm sure, understand a little bit about what I've been doing. And this morning, I just thought it might be interesting since, how many of you are from Florida? I know a couple. Wayne's back. Oh my goodness. There are a couple. Florida for a short time. Since many of you are not from Florida, I thought it might be interesting for you to know a little bit about where the industry has been over the past few years. And I came to Florida in 1976, having studied landscape architecture at the University of Arizona. That's in Tucson, just in case you didn't know. And public garden administration at the University of Delaware in Longwood Gardens. So I came here after having not studied horticulture, but having studied kind of two things on the outer edge of horticulture. But my passion was about horticulture, and I wanted to practice horticulture in a public institution. And I had had kind of a bad experience with working in a not-for-profit organization, so I was looking for somebody who practiced quality horticulture in a profit organization. I think I had a choice of maybe two or three in all of America, because there weren't too many corporations that were focused on quality horticulture. I had worked in a wholesale bedding plant operation in Cold Spring, New York. I was actually very fortunate to work with Vic Carlson, who was the brother of Will Carlson. Many of you knew him from Michigan State. He was kind of the guru of bedding plants in America. And so I had insight into that. And I also worked at the library of the Horticultural Society of New York, one of the finest horticultural libraries in the country at that time. I came to Walt Disney World as the supervisor of the tree farm and nursery in 1976. I actually had a little bit of a different title. I'm really proud of this. I actually was hired as the supervisor of agricultural and environmental studies. I had never studied agriculture or the environment, but that was my title. I was the first person hired for this concept known as Epcot. Things changed a lot, and I ended up being the supervisor of the tree farm and nursery. When I came to Florida, I was the second woman in a staff of 150 in grounds maintenance. That was what it was called. And I was only the second professionally trained member of the management staff. So when I came to Walt Disney World in Florida at that time, I was kind of positioned as a missionary for both women in horticulture and for professionals in horticulture. It was a challenging time. I found out many years later that there was a bet that I wouldn't make it 2 weeks.
Boy, were they wrong.
Yeah. I outdid them all. So let me share a bit about what I encountered at the industry and the Florida industry at that time. Bedding plants. I was told it was too hot to grow bedding plants in Florida. In fact, there were only two bedding plant operations in Central Florida, and they were relatively small. There was one out of Orlando and one out of Tampa. Most of our flowers came from out of state, from Michigan, from other places, and they came in market packs. Flowers would arrive at the wrong season. It was not uncommon for us to get pansies and snapdragons in May. Our flower beds at Disney, in fact, when I got there in 1976, the park had opened in 1971, I was pretty appalled. They looked pretty bad. And no other commercial operation, no other theme parks or hotels were crazy enough to use bedding plants in Florida. You didn't see them anywhere. There were no bedding plant trials in the state because you couldn't grow flowers here. Very few flowers were being bred for the Sun Belt, either in Florida or anywhere else in the country. We counted on no more than probably 10 different flowers a season to put on the show. We were really, really devoted to wax begonias in the summer, and we were really, really devoted to petunias in the winter. And that was pretty much the core of the way we used flowers at that time. So that's bedding plants. Hanging baskets. Now, I had seen some really beautiful flowering hanging baskets on the Canadian side of Niagara Falls, in Niagara Falls. Beautiful hanging baskets. And I thought, wouldn't it be terrific if we could bring flowering hanging baskets to Walt Disney World? I had not seen flowering. I had traveled quite a bit by that time. I went across country 4 times, going to the University of Arizona from my home state of New York. And I had not seen flowering hanging baskets anywhere in America. I did see them. I saw them in Rogers Gardens in California, but they were just at the garden center. They really weren't out there on display very much. They were going to homeowners. When we decided to put flowering hanging baskets, beautiful flowering hanging baskets down Main Street in the Magic Kingdom, this is back now in 1977, there were so few cascading plants, flowering plants on the market, that we had to plug wax begonias in the sides of sphagnum baskets and grow them out as balls in order to have a full hanging basket. Hanging baskets at that time were considered pots with plants on top, coleus on top, something on top. Hanging down was not an option for most of the year with hanging baskets. So the begonia ball became our specialty. We were really good at begonia balls. Flowering trees. Central Florida actually has, and South Florida actually have, a dearth of native flowering trees. We just don't have them. Ed Menninger, do any of you know who Ed Menninger was? He was the flowering tree man. He wrote this really wonderful book. He wrote a series of books. He was a journalist out of Stuart, Florida, and he wrote a book called Flowering Trees of the World. And you'd think in reading that book that he had traveled. He never traveled. He never left Stuart, Florida. He actually did everything through correspondence, and he collected seeds. He wrote to ambassadors, he wrote to anywhere he could write around the world, and he asked for their most beautiful flowering trees. He got seeds, and he would produce them in Florida, and then he disseminated those seeds, those plants. And when he was writing, and this was at the turn of the century, turn of the 20th century, he actually had the most remarkable collection of flowering trees for Florida, but then we stopped growing them. So when I got here in 76, it was really hard to find flowering trees to use in our landscapes. We struggled actually to find seasonal color, either with shrubs or with trees. And we started the Flowering Tree Conference, and we had a Flowering Tree Conference for many years. And Ed Menninger was around 90 years old at the time, and he was blind, he couldn't hear, he had lost an arm through a chemistry experiment when he was quite a young boy. And he came to those conferences and would share these wonderful tales of how he discovered how to propagate some of these unusual trees. Another thing about trees were primarily moved with ball and burlap, even in our sandy soils, and 80% success in transplanting of big trees was considered pretty much acceptable. That was what we considered to be a decent rate of success. Harsh pesticides were the norm and were being used in preventative schedules in both structures and in landscapes. Pest control, that's what it was called, was a third shift operation with technicians suited up in protective gear for their work every single time they went out. Irrigation systems were neither efficient nor effective at delivering the appropriate water needed. They got some water out there, but the water had to kind of find its way through capillary action and whatever. I used to tease the guys that thank God it rains every once in a while, because then the plants can really get what they need. Because irrigation was not very efficient or effective at getting the distribution out there. Wastewater was being wasted, essentially being thrown away through land spreading. So that's kind of where water was at that time. Foliage plants, both the small stuff that was being grown out of Apopka, Florida, which was the major producer of the small stuff that went into the five and dime stores and around, and the large material that came out of South Florida, were all being used for interior scaping. That was the direction that whole market went. And most of them were being propagated by cuttings and division. So this isn't that long ago that our industry was very different than what we experience today. College education in horticulture. College education at the University of Florida was almost exclusively focused on nursery management. You know that for a fact because it was true around the country. It was difficult to find professionally trained arborists, landscape maintenance personnel, irrigation specialists, interior scapers, pest management technicians. Why do I mention that? Because those particular parts of the field were all being delivered better salaries than those that were being hired as gardeners or strictly as horticulturists. So we were offering premiums for certain fields in horticulture, and our universities weren't delivering people who had those specialties. So we were having to hire experienced people out of the industry and discovering that those experienced people, take arborists for instance, how many of you deal with trees, arboriculture? Well, for those of you who deal with arboriculture, you know this for a fact, that many of the arborists are being hired by the utility companies. And they believe that arboriculture is about having a chainsaw on your belt. We took all the chainsaws out of Walt Disney World. The only time you could use a chainsaw was to cut a tree down, because that is such a damaging way of dealing with trees. And so we were able, we actually had to create our own training program in order to be able to deal with aesthetic pruning rather than the kind of pruning that's being done by power companies. So the education in horticulture was a challenge for us. Computers were in minimal use, as we know, and were primarily for office functions. There was little research done on the benefits of plants to people. At Walt Disney World, we basically went on the intuition of Walt Disney himself. He's the one that said, we need to have flowers, trees, we need our landscape to be beautiful, then people will come to our theme parks. And he was using the old state farm kind of, state fair kind of format. He was changing from that state fair format to this beautiful place to come to play. And it was based on intuition. He had no research. He just had a gut feel. And he's not the only one that had a gut feel and made a huge change for us. Mayor Daley out of Chicago had a gut feel that quality landscapes were going to transform his city. And because of that, Chicago has helped to transform cities all across the country. So he's not the only, and that was done through an intuition. It wasn't done through a lot of research. Now we have the research. We hadn't even heard the term functional landscapes at that point, even though we had a couple of green roofs and designed stormwater systems to pass through planted environments. Functional landscapes, of course, now are taking on a much different role. So that was less than 40 years ago. That's where our industry was. There's been a lot of change. Today, Florida is a major producer of bedding plants for the Southeast, not just for Florida, for the whole Southeast. Disney's bedding plant trials have been going on since 1978. They're still going on. And now there are additional trials in many Florida nurseries, as well as at Lou Gardens here in Orlando and at the Orange County Extension. We now know what seasons are appropriate for various genera and what conditions favor their success. Flowers are now produced in 3 and 4 inch pots. That was a huge shift for the industry to go to 3 and 4 inch pots, and now we're seeing it across the country. Many of these are now in non-plastic pots, in pots that are considered to be sustainable, whether that be paper, wood fiber. We're seeing more sustainable pots being used. Many large plug producers with sophisticated equipment are based in Florida. The plug industry has transformed the propagation of bedding plants. Plugs didn't even exist 30 years ago. The University of Florida has been doing some remarkable work breeding new flowers Caladium varieties, my favorites, Florida Sweetheart and Summer Pink. If you haven't used caladiums, they work really great in the heat. And Florida, do you know that 95% of the caladium industry is grown in Florida? If you buy them from Holland, they come from Florida. If you buy them from Minnesota, they come from Florida. Florida is produced, Thailand's the other producer. But Florida produces over 95% of the caladiums in this country, and they're fabulous in hot weather. So with global climate change, you might want to see if they work. A friend of mine just started using them in San Diego and was amazed that they work in California and work really well. The other thing that's kind of interesting about caladiums that we just learned was that they're great for cut flowers. The leaves will last over 2 weeks in a vase if you don't chill it. So here's a huge industry that is really now booming because of some really great work at the University of Florida producing some new varieties. Another plant that's in the market now and is transformative are some of the new coleus coming out of the University of Florida. Redhead is a bright red coleus that doesn't flower. It's been bred not to flower. It is transforming the way we use coleus. And some of the newer varieties are now being bred to have no flowering. The international floricultural industry is also, and the national and international floricultural industry are also now breeding excellent flowers for the Sun Belt. So we have a lot of choice. We have genera that are now being used as flowers that we didn't even know about 30 years ago. In any season, there are over 30 different flowering plants that we can use in any season now here in Florida. Florida is not an easy place to grow flowers. It's not. But it can be done, and we are doing it. So that's about flowers. Flowering hanging baskets are now featured in many of our Florida resorts and communities. Winter Garden, Florida has some fabulous hanging baskets. Winter Park, Florida, fabulous hanging baskets. These didn't exist. We didn't know what kind of flowers to put in these baskets. Remarkable new cascading plants are available, from petunias to calibrachoa, bacopa to begonias, sweet potato to mandevilla. These have all provided us with tough, colorful plants that can be featured from light poles. Light poles, high above cars and people, at the 15-degree angle that research has shown us is the angle we prefer as human beings for viewing. 15 degrees, up and down, that's what we prefer. Things on the ground, we don't see them as well. We like them up here. So baskets are now becoming the most important way we can announce that plants are important in our environments. Hanging baskets are doing it, and they're becoming, the industry has provided remarkable material for us to be able to use in hanging baskets. We no longer have to plug the sides. Hardly anybody uses begonia balls anymore. But we have unbelievable. I just came from the Seattle area. I saw hanging baskets that were this tall, a plant that we could never use in Florida. They had fuchsias and all kinds of amazing things. But hanging baskets this tall, and we can do it even here in Florida with some of these new varieties that are in the marketplace. Flowering trees and shrubs. Some of these had been introduced from South America and Asia many years ago, but they went out of favor. And now we see them as standard in our landscapes. Tababuya, Tipiwana, Peltiform. For those of you from the temperate zone, you don't know these genera, but you wouldn't, because you're using flowering trees that have been brought in over the years for the temperate zones. The Sun Belt never saw these, and we can't use many of them. But we had to find our own and start incorporating them into the landscapes, and we have. But the Crepe Myrtle Breeding Program at the National Arboretum brought us excellent new cultivars with mildew resistance, and those have been incorporated into our landscapes and have transformed many of our communities in Florida with beautiful flowering trees in the middle of summer. Big tree moving techniques have been perfected thanks to research done at the University of Florida and other places. And the expectation for survival rates from transplanting is now considerably higher. I think when we did the animal kingdom, I think we had a 4% loss on big trees, and we moved over 100,000 major specimens into that park. So it was a remarkable change. The research had been done just before that, and we justified that research, spending the money on that research, that if we could reduce the loss, we could justify the research, and then we'd have that research for all times. And interestingly enough, water was the key. Oh my God, consider that. Not a big surprise, but we needed research to prove it, because as you know, there are many products out there in the marketplace that say, just use our product and you will have good transplanting of big trees. And we wanted to find out if we needed those products. Water is the key. Tropical foliage that had been used exclusively in interiors has become an essential thriller plant in large containers, featured in cities throughout the country, again, starting in Chicago. As many of you know, when you teach people about how to plant effective containers, you know the words, right? You gotta have the thriller, you gotta have the filler, and you gotta have the spiller. You know that, right? Okay, well, that's container. That's container planting 101. Well, the thrillers now, in large part, are tropical foliage plants. Bananas, palms, calacacia. Chicago started it and now it's caught on. You see it in cities and communities around the country. The tissue culture industry has made many of these amazing plants. Those calacacias with those giant leaves made them available widely, and now they're being distributed widely. With the dramatic use of vegetables at the land and a national passion now for growing fresh, local organic food, vegetable gardens are now proliferating in communities and schools and home gardens. We are even seeing them in commercial landscapes. Vegetables are the new national passion, and varieties that work in Florida and in whatever locations you're at are really important. One thing that I've learned, though, which is really interesting, and I've seen this across the country, people are passionate now about growing vegetables. Yeah, they want to have them in their home gardens. They're growing them in their community gardens. We're seeing vegetables being grown. But they don't know how to harvest, and they don't know how to use them. And so that's a big challenge for us. They don't know when to harvest. We were talking a little bit about when do you harvest the personal watermelons. Well, when to harvest plants for the highest nutrition, for the best flavor, which varieties to use, all of this information is very regional and is really, really important for us to share. I was surprised to find that out. I would visit gardens where they would have butternut squash this big, 30 of them, in their vegetable garden. I said, what are you doing with all these butternut squash? Nothing. Well, why do you have them? It was fun to grow them. Why don't you eat them? Don't know how. Okay, so let's try it. We went in, you know, three ways to cook butternut squash. So I think that is an interesting challenge right now. You'd think that they're growing them to eat them, but that's not necessarily why people are growing vegetables. IPM strategies have been embraced, and harsh pesticides are no longer the first line of defense. That's a huge change. Think of those pest control operators who used to have to suit up in 90-degree weather. They don't have to do that anymore. Think of those poor suckers that had to work through the night while everybody else got to work during the daytime. They can work during the daytime now. Healthy, disease-resistant plants now are the first line of defense. We understand that, and we're trying to make sure that we understand what it takes to grow healthy, disease-resistant plants. Then biologicals, biorationals, and baits. Pest management technicians, now we call it pest management, not pest control. Pest management technicians no longer have to work third shift and rarely have to suit up. We actually, Walt Disney World was really kind of fun when we started using biologicals, the good bugs, and the pest management guys would carry good bugs on their belt, and then they'd carry a squirt bottle. And one day I asked them, why are you carrying that squirt bottle? Do you know why they were carrying the squirt bottle? Because ladybugs need a drink before they get to work. And now you don't know that unless you're doing it. You can tell all the people in the world to use ladybugs, but if you've never done it, you don't know. They need a drink first. So the squirt bottle is really important. Irrigation technology incorporated computerized weather-driven controls into their programs, and these new irrigation systems now deliver flexibility, efficiency, and water conservation. Huge transition in our industry. It was slow to take on, as many of these things have been, but we've got great models out there now that we can all replicate. Recognizing that good jobs are available in landscape construction and landscape maintenance beyond nursery management, the course offerings at the university, and it was thanks to many at the University of Florida that this was possible here in the state, Dr. Tyrrell Nell and many of his colleagues there, realized that it was important to broaden the offerings, and now we have some tremendous professionals here in the state practicing in all aspects of horticulture, and it's just amazing the breadth of what they're doing. It is important that students know the science and art of horticulture as they go out in the world, again, no matter which part of horticulture they choose. If they choose to be the arborist working in a landscape maintenance operation, they still need to know why the heck a mower isn't supposed to bang into the trunk of that tree. They need to know that. And we need to know what we're supposed to be protecting as we go out and do our work. We need to know the importance of research and stay on top of the research that's being done so that we can benefit from all of that good work. Internships are encouraged now so that the students can get practical experience as well as book learning. That was a huge benefit to us at Walt Disney. When I left in 2000, when I retired in 2000, we had over 90 interns a summer. We were running a college program with those interns, basically, encouraging them to know what they were doing based on the book learning they had had. And in terms of research, in terms of people plant research, there is now a body of research on the benefits of plants to people. Health benefits, you know them all, crime prevention, real estate values, children learning better in outdoor environments, lower heating and cooling costs, big trees overhead slowing traffic. These are all research pieces that have come out of Cornell, out of University of Illinois at Urbana, out of Washington. These are very important research pieces that are coming out because no longer can we go in front of a commission in a city and just say, plants are good. Plants are nice. They'll basically say police and fire are more important. So we have to have the research to show that we can deliver economic vitality and sustainability, that we can deliver increased quality of life, that we, through our plants and quality landscapes, can make a huge difference in people's lives. Florida has once again become a destination for great horticulture and beautiful landscapes. As I travel this country judging cities for American bloom, I am encouraged that we now have communities that recognize the importance of quality landscapes to the quality of life and to economic vitality. These quality landscapes are no longer nice to haves, they are need to haves. Hanging baskets, once they're up, people will not let them come down. They are as important to that community as any other critical factor that the municipality delivers. Many times they're not being paid for by the municipality. They're being paid for by donations in some other way. But no matter how they're being delivered, they are no longer considered fluff. They're no longer considered extraneous. Flowers and hanging baskets announce the importance of plants and the pride of place. Big trees line streets protected by scenic highway designations. Greenhouses of hydroponic vegetables and aquaculture are on rooftops right on Main Street. Winter Garden, Florida. Amazing. Right on Main Street, there is a commercial operation growing vegetables and fish. We desperately need knowledgeable and skilled horticultural professionals to offer information on what to grow and how to grow it. Trees, shrubs, flowers, hanging baskets, vegetables, fruit trees, turf. We need them to encourage good design and recognize the value of designers. We need them to offer reasonable, practical ways of ensuring the long-term success of new landscapes and offer insight into the special care big trees and historic landscapes require. We had a terrible situation here in Florida. A crazy lady 2 years ago needed a little light so she could use her drugs. She set a fire in the cavity of a 3,500-year-old cypress tree, the oldest in the world, and burned it down. We need to protect trees like that and historic landscapes that are of value. We need people who know how to do it and who advocate for it. We need professionals who can find solutions to serious pest problems and climatic change. We need these professionals to have a good sense of environmental responsibility, conserving resources, composting properly. I can't tell you how many communities I go into and they tell me they're using compost, and what that means is they dump everything in a pile. Never test it, never test whether it's been heated, have no idea whether it has pathogens or not. We need to train those people. We're helping by judging. We can put it in our report. It'd be a good idea for you to make sure that your compost is horticultural quality, but it's amazing how much is not known about composting. So we need folks that have a good sense of environmental responsibility. What if every student had to test compost, had to create compost? 75% of our waste stream is compostable. That's an important stat. We focus on recycling and forget how important composting really is in managing waste. Other things, minimizing harsh chemicals, really managing waste and minimizing it, reducing sound pollution. How many of you think that's an important horticultural agenda? Reducing sound pollution. Isn't it ironic, as we think we're creating beauty, that we are delivering some of the worst sound pollution of any industry? The only other one that works with us on that is the boat industry. They're just as bad. But between boats and horticultural equipment, we have delivered the worst sound pollution of any industry. It's a challenge. How many are doing research on equipment that's quiet? A real challenge, really important. And we need professionals who know how to protect the natural as well as the agricultural heritage in our communities. Those who understand agriculture very often don't understand and know about ornamental horticulture, and vice versa. We need them knowledgeable in both. Doesn't have to be totally immersed in both, but they need to be knowledgeable enough to recognize that the agricultural heritage in our country is important to protect. And ornament is important because it captures people's attention, so that they will protect those things that are of value that they don't see as quickly. We need landscape and nursery professionals who understand the importance of science and research and stay connected to what is happening in the universities around the country. Extension is so important. We absolutely need that connector that makes sure that the research, the amazing research being done, is translated and can be used. Communities can be the signpost for that. If we can get our communities doing it, then our homeowners, our businesses will follow back. In the end, whether in Florida or in your state, We need horticultural professionals who will truly manage public landscapes that can motivate and inspire businesses and residents, schools and senior centers to use plants and create beauty so that the quality of their lives is enhanced and the economic vitality in their communities is ensured. Plants can do it. And we are the industry that can truly change America, community by community. Thank you.
Ah, thank you very much, Katie. That was fantastic. Guys, I got 2 days left to be your vice president of the industry section. So just before I step out the door, Katie, thank you for allowing us to honor you. You've had a tremendous career, and I think you're still going. For some of you other folks, Paul, Dwayne, Mary, Gary, thank you very much for letting me be part of your team. For you people in this industry and by extension, thank you very much for allowing me to participate in your breakfast and to put together some workshops and to be able to recognize and honor and network with you all in horticulture. It's been a real treat. Got my incoming Vice President Angela Davis over here, HM Klaus. Angela's going to be taking over next year, so I'll hand the baton off to her. But just in short, I really want to just tell you last time, I really appreciate being able to have the honor and the privilege of serving y'all. So thank you very much.
I thought Jeff might have wanted to finish this off, but again, I'm appreciative of serving the society for the last 2 years, and there's lots of talks and workshops and everything today, so go forth and learn, okay? Thank you very much, everybody.